Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WSHE, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Hope your Monday's going well. We've got a lot to go on this Bears. Are we calling it a victory Monday, Waddle?
I would think so. I think they won the draft.
Oh, they won the draft. Now it's time to win some games.
Of course, yes. But I think that they won the draft.
This is the most excited the fan base has been in some time. Phone number to reach us is 312-332-3776 as we're broadcasting from our State Street studios. Every time I turned on the TV, there was Field Yates breaking it down. First on draft night on ABC, and then through days two and three, there he was, telling me that the Bears got a pretty good pass rusher in round five. There he was telling us about the Bears punter in round four.
Did he tell you that the Bears won the draft at any point?
Let's ask him right now on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline as Field Yates joins us right now on the Waddle and Sylvie Show. Answer Waddle's question. Did the Bears win the draft?
They sure did on night one, guys, and that's not me trying to play to the crowd here. I understand that draft grades can prove to be worth their weight in paper, but the Bears had my number one prospect, wire-to-wire, Caleb Williams, and he went off the board, obviously, at number one overall. Never wavered in my stance of Caleb being the best player in this class, and then they got a value, which it's hard to get a value when you're picking in the first nine selections two times, but they got a value with Roma Dunze, the sixth player on my board. Maybe the most polished prospect in the class, not named Marvin Harrison Jr. And I've had a chance to spend a little bit of time around Roma Dunze. And I said this many, many times. This is not, again, me just living in the moment here. This was my impression when I spent time with him at the Washington Pro Day. I think you'll be hard-pressed to find a more impressive young man than Roma Dunze. And I get it. There are probably people that are going to say, we want good football players, not just good people. But you're making a major investment in a top 10 pick financially. You got to know that the minute this guy gets his first check, is he going to be the same person that he was prior to having this life-altering money? I guarantee you that's the case of Roma Dunze, who was so, so productive for Washington last season. And in a year in which a defense tried every which way to slow down Roma Dunze, they had no stopping him. He had five catches in every game but one last season. And in that one game, he didn't have five catches. He had three catches for 112 yards and two touchdowns. So there was no answer for Roma Dunze last season. He landed in a perfect spot in Chicago.
We were talking about this field for months, trying to figure this all out. And there were a few different conversations we had with people that stood out to me. And your conversation with us was one of those. Because I'll always remember it was early in the process. And you said to us that if they would come away with Caleb Williams at one and then Roma Dunze at nine, that you sprint to the podium and it would be a home run. How often does a dream scenario, when especially when you're picking at nine and you're like at the mercy of seven other teams in between one and nine, does that dream scenario come to work out?
Infrequently. In the NFL draft, it's all about the things that you don't expect happening to actually take place. And that was the beauty of it. And I actually thought that beyond the fact that Roma Dunze was there, guys, was the possibility. And I wouldn't have crushed the Bears if they went this direction of taking a player like Byron Murphy II or Dallas Turner, the edge from Alabama. Like, there was a case for either of those players at number nine, both relative to the board and also the fact that, you know, the Bears, like, they could still use, or they could have at the time, still used a bit more edge help, right? And Matt Eberflus's defense, kind of the apex of it, is having a disruptive three technique. So I would have understood it. I mean, there were some mock drafts late in the process in which you saw either of those two players connected to Chicago. But I thought that the, like, you know, keeping it simple approach with Roma Dunze, like not letting this unique opportunity pass you by, was just good football business. And I understand the Bears now have three great receivers, and you can make a case that the Bears wide receiver room would have been fine without Rome, but I expect Keenan Allen to continue to hold up pretty well here in Chicago. But when you've got a guy in his 30s, it's something you have to be mindful of. So and then moreover than that, you know, the best part about what the Bears have done this offseason is in a league in which we see teams ruin quarterbacks as much as quarterbacks fail to live up to their draft slots. The Bears have gone all in on Caleb Williams this offseason and done so much to make sure that, you know, there's going to be rookie bumps because there always are, but to do as best that they could do to make sure that Caleb Williams had the pieces in place around him to make this a smooth transition from USC to the pros.
Phil, this is a very difficult NFL novel to have projected it would have worked out this way when you think about all that has fallen in place with our team. And this is all good fortune. And Sylvia and I have talked about this over the course of years. Even great teams need a good bit of good luck to get to where they want to go. And when you kind of factor in all that has transpired here, where the Texans beating the Colts in the final game of the season a couple of years ago, then the Carolina Panthers draft Bryce Young and not C.J. Stroud, then they suck all year last year, then the Falcons decide to take Michael Penix after giving Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed. All of these things that have fallen in line, kind of hard to have predicted a year and a half ago.
No two ways about it. And it kind of reminds me again. Well, I'm not trying to say that this is the outcome, but I think you could probably trace a similar story to almost any team that's had sustained success, yes. Right? Go back to, I mean, pick a quarterback that was there for a long time with his team that had a lot of wins, and you could probably find something along those lines. On Thursday night, because it's the most recent example of this, we were reminded by people about how the Chiefs tried to trade up for Paxton Lynch in the draft a year or two before Patrick Mahomes was in the NFL draft. Obviously, if you had done that, then you're not taking Patrick Mahomes a year or two later at that number 10 overall pick. So there's almost always a few twists and turns that can lead to, you know, this incredible outcome for a team, and obviously the Bears have to actually go out there and do the work and win the games for us to think of everything that took place going back to week 18 of the 2022 season and think of it in that same vein. But good fortune is inextricable. Like that's just going to be a part of almost any team's success. You got to get a little bit lucky here or there. But the Bears, I really feel like, have done an awesome job utilizing the resources that have been afforded them, in part because of some of their good fortune. And I think have a very clear vision of what they want to do. And I really believe that Caleb Williams, especially relative to other number one overall picks, and certainly compared to a couple of the other quarterbacks taken in the first round this year, is set up for some significant early success.
Field, I always preferred Odunze over Neighbors. Did you? It sounds like you did as well. And why?
Well, I had Malik Nabers as the fourth-rated player on the board.
Okay, so you had him higher.
Sixth.
Okay.
And it was, I mean, that's nip and tuck, though, right? I mean, yeah. It's a matter of sort of your preference in the kind of player. Odunze is the more polished player right now. He's unbelievable in contested catch situations. You're going to hear that term surrounding Rome Odunze a lot. He had 24 contested catches last year. That was tied for the most in the entire FBS, along with Luke McCaffrey, who went 100th overall to the Washington Commanders. Odunze is an amazing route runner as well, has great size, great consistency. I talked about that a little bit earlier on. Malik Nabers, a more explosive player, right? Probably a tenth of a second or so faster in the 40-yard time, and he's the guy that, you throw an 8-yard hook and it turns into a 28-yard gain very consistently for Malik Nabers. But I really felt as though this year, we had three wideouts who in many prior drafts would have easily been the number one wide receiver in the class without much competition. One of them had to go third, but I felt like the third quarterback off the board this year and the third wide receiver off the board this year were the furthest things possible from a consolation prize for whichever team took them.
Talking to Field Yates, it's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. All right, on the flip side of drafting Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze, they drafted a punter in the fourth round. Now, we were here Friday, and Jeff Meller, who you know well, was a big proponent of them doing this going into the weekend. He actually wanted them to do that in the third round. Waddle and I were poking fun, more so even Waddle was. And today, Yurko and Carm have gone off on them, calling it an arrogant pick. Torrey Taylor is very good at what he does. So what say you on them deciding to draft a punter?
Wow, arrogant. I didn't have that one on my bingo card today, describing trading up for a punter.
It's the first word I thought of as well, Field. It really was.
Yeah.
And the reason I used it real quick was because it says to me, like, you know what? We don't have any other needs. We filled the edge. We filled center. We filled offensive tackles. So let's take the best punter we've seen in the last 5 years.
All right. So I didn't read it that way myself. I read it as at the time that the Bears were trying to get back in, or at the time of that pick, when Torrey Taylor was taken, it was, do we have a deal in hand to move back a little bit? Because if we don't, and we don't necessarily have a guarantee to get back in later, can we afford to miss out on this player? That was my interpretation. I said that on the broadcast. You can go look for your receipt if you're looking for it right now and you think I'm just saying this after the fact. Obviously, the Bears did find a way back in the fifth round when they traded back in for Austin Booker. So I guess I interpreted it differently. Maybe this is the reality of doing the draft role in the capacity that I did this past season, is that I really, truly believe, starting very early on in day three, the board is just so different for each team. And the things that you're trying to accomplish are so different for each team that I don't necessarily want to pound any day three pick because of the variance that is inherent to the exercise. Giovanni Manu, I'll give you an example of another day three pick that some people were trying to figure out still. And I said, Giovanni Manu going on day three to the Lions, who traded a 2025 third round pick to get back into the fourth this year. This is a kid from the University of British Columbia who has a relatively light experience and resume on the football field because he was a basketball player growing up. Like, guys, like, take a swing on a guy on day three. Have some conviction. Have some belief in these guys. If we accept that the board is, like, fairly similar for a lot of teams in the first 20, maybe 25 players, then it just gets a whole lot different on day three. I'd rather a team trade up for or take a player that they actually fully believe in, as opposed to just kind of throwing a handful of darts on guys they may not, especially because the Bears, like, they've had big draft classes in recent seasons. They have a little bit more depth on the roster than most teams who were picking in the positions that they were picking over the past couple of years. So it didn't bother me as much, but I think that having draft discussions in discourse is certainly a healthy thing to do.
What are your thoughts on their third-round pick, the offensive tackle from Yale?
Kieran Amagaji, a Yale offensive tackle, who was one of the cool projects in this year's class. He needs some time. He is massive, though. 36 and an eighth of an inch arms, which is huge. He's got a great wingspan as well. Carries his frame really, really well. This is going to sound silly, and it's going to sound simple and redundant, but I've always said it, and it was cool to hear Seahawks general manager John Schneider dive into this exact same dynamic when he was talking about the team's day three pick, an offensive tackle, Michael Jarrell, out of the University of Finley. He said, when you're scouting a guy at that level, you want to see this guy absolutely dominate. And that was the case for Kieran in Yale. And I get it. It's the Ivy League. This is not like playing against Alabama and Georgia every other Saturday. Still, you saw the flashes of dominance. He's got to find a way to put on a little bit extra weight, put on a little bit of extra strength, and it's going to just be some developmental time. But the Bears, with their tackle duo, and I think Kieran probably ends up as a left tackle, given the fact that Darnell Wright's not going anywhere anytime soon, this gives him a bit of a runway. So I figured I thought he was a round eight, a top 100-ish player in the draft. I figured, you know, plus or minus, you know, call it 25 picks. What was he, 80-something for the Bears? I can't remember what it was.
I think it was
75. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, somewhere, yeah. So I figured somewhere between, let's call it 75 and 125 was the range for Kieran, and he ends up going at the top of that range. He needs some time, but you know, a developmental upside pick for the Bears to work with over the next couple of seasons.
Field Yates joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. As far as Booker is concerned, I've heard a lot of people say that if he went back to Kansas for another year, next year he could have been projected like an end of the first round or second round edge. Would you, if he would have had another season like this year or improved on that with development, do you agree on that? Are the Bears getting a guy with high upside?
Oh, massive upside. No question about it. I thought, I mean, there was a time where he was getting buzzed as like a late round two pick. I mean, there was that was what kind of potential he has, but I understand why he lasted until round five. He started one career college game, one, did Austin Booker. He was a redshirt at Minnesota two seasons ago. This is not exactly, you know, that's not like going to, again, Alabama or Georgia and redshirting because you got five stars ahead of you on the depth chart, right? So got one career college star, basically one season of really playing an active role in a defense. The question with Austin Booker is going to be, can he be consistent? He was obviously a high producer in the sack front last year, but can you be a down-in, down-out, do your job, do the dirty work, do the little things right kind of player, or are you going to be the kind of guy that you know, just has great sack production? Well, I guess great sack production at the NFL level is fine, but are you going to be the kind of guy that kind of wants to just pin your ears back in obvious passing situations and just rush the passer? Which, if that's all he becomes, I guess there is a role for that in the NFL. But for him to have formed or morphed into a first or second round pick, he was going to have to become a more complete player. He did not have a great 40 time at the combine. Took a little bit of the bloom off the rose, but the length is really good. He's got a pretty impressive arsenal of pass rushing moves, and certainly is a quarterback hunter in those obvious passing situations. So to get him in round five, I thought was reasonable value.
Okay. And then let's get an overall on where the Bears are at this point. I told you earlier that I always remember the conversation that we had early in this draft process with you. I'll always remember the conversation that we had with you when Poles was hired a couple of years ago as a guy who you guys were working a lower level with the Kansas City Chiefs early on. And you knew Poles very early in your career, and you promised us that he would be good, and he has been very good. Even with all your belief in Ryan Poles, Field, did you believe that the Bears would be where they are today, a short two-plus years later, or is this exactly where you thought they would be?
Well, I can't say that I knew all the specific twists and turns, obviously. Here's what I did think was going to happen under Poles. I thought he was going to spend the beginning portion of his tenure having to kind of undo some of the things that were in place that needed to be undone, right? Getting the cap cleaned up, you know, trimming the roster of some players that either were no longer a fit schematically or guys that were making a certain amount of money that wasn't necessarily cost that were justified. And then also making some difficult decisions. I understand that Roquan Smith is an all-pro level linebacker, but the question was, if you're on a team that at the season he was traded wound up with the first overall pick in the draft, do you want to pay top of the market the off-ball linebacker spot, which the league has shown has not been a position that is typically valued in terms of, like, there's not a great correlation between, you know, paying a bunch of off-ball linebackers and seeing instant winning success, right? Quarterbacks, left tackles, wide receivers, pass rushers tend to be the positions that provide a bit more value. But I did think Poles would find a way to get this figured out mostly through the draft because of how little cash they had spent in the years, you know, directly before he got hired. They had to do some work there in free agency as well. But no, I'm not surprised that the future is bright here in Chicago. You got to turn that hope and that potential into wins more consistently. But this feels like they're ready for liftoff year with the way they played defensively down the stretch and the offense having all the pieces in place to be really good right out of the gate with Caleb Williams, even as a rookie quarterback. Like, this to me feels like the year. This is the year the Bears make their big push, and I think there's a lot of reasons why Bears fans are excited, and deservedly so.
Before we let you go, this is shaping up to be a very competitive division in the NFC North. Mm-hmm. Quickly, what was your take on what the Packers and the Lions and the Vikings did in the draft as well?
Yeah, I thought the Lions, I liked their day three. Actually, I liked all the things that they did for the most part. They got good value, though, on day three. The cornerback room for the Lions obviously has been totally made over. The big thing they lack in the corner room right now is still a little bit of speed, but those are two good players they got in rounds one and rounds two. The Packers, it was just kind of a classic, like, address a bunch of needs draft for Green Bay. So I thought that was solid in the first three rounds specifically. And then with the Vikings, you know, J.J. McCarthy, it's a really, really good landing spot for him. I had J.J. McCarthy ranked lower on the overall big board, but I understand that quarterbacks fly off earlier than other positions because of the potential value that quarterback can bring to the franchise. It's a good spot, though, there for JJ when you factor in, obviously, the great weapons they have around them, a very good coach in Kevin O'Connell, and then also two good tackles. So the NFC North, I haven't looked at the over-under totals for wins or the betting favorites right now for the division, but I would imagine it's the Lions. But it feels like one of the most closely contested divisions in the entire league right now.
Will Caleb Williams throw for 4,000 yards in his rookie year?
Ooh, rookie year? Yeah, why the heck not? That would be boring to say otherwise. It's going to happen at some point in his career, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens this year. Heck yeah. If they avoid some terrible weather games, like if they have a home-heavy finish to the season and they can avoid a couple of terrible games, then, yeah, let's make it happen.
Bears won the draft.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Hey, Field, great job. We appreciate the friendship. And hopefully in Football Fest, the positivity is going to be flowing.
Oh, I can't wait, guys. I appreciate you, as always, for having me on. We'll talk again sometime soon.
Thanks, Field. There's Field Yates. Great job on the NFL draft. We've got Waddle's World coming up next. And if you missed our conversation with Field Yates and you just tuned in at the very end, you can grab that on our brand new YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/@WaddleandSylvie. We've got Waddle's World coming up next.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Isn't that why you are here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
And of course, it's not just the Monday after the 2024 NFL draft. As you said to me in a questionary manner, is today Lealia Day?
I don't know. I didn't get my Cubs notification like usual.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. I hope we get hotter than just to stuff it up them 3,000 people that show up every day. Because if they're the real Chicago fans, they can kiss my right downtown and print it. They're really, really behind you around here. My ass.
It's so great.
What the am I supposed to do? Go out there and let my players get destroyed every day and be quiet about it for the nickel dime people to show up? The don't even work. That's why they're out at the game. They ought to go out and get a job and find out what it's like to go out there and earn a living.
So great. It was 1983, early in 1983. That was from the late, great Les Grobstein. He recorded that. He's the only person. Gene Greco was there.
Didn't Gene Greco have video of it but can't find it?
Yes, or like he got lost or something like that.
Like in a flood in his basement in Will Matt?
No, I think someone took it from NBC at the time. Something like that. There was a conspiracy, but the only record of it was from Les Grobstein's tape recorder. And they made him apologize soon after. The anger in his voice, the creativity in which he uses the language. I know Black and Abdallah always downplayed it. I love The Ranch for so many reasons. The way he goes off on the fans. He's going off on the fans. The fans there. about being, who don't have jobs. The ones who don't. He's talking about the ones who do show up.
Yeah.
Not having jobs. The few thousand that do go down to Wrigley, those are the ones who don't work. The rest of them have jobs.
To all you haters.
Because, because that back then, they only played day baseball at Wrigley because they didn't have lights. So anybody who showed up during day games in the middle of the week, according to Lealia, didn't have jobs.
Like, for those who don't understand, before, 1984... and before Wrigleyville became really Wrigleyville, they used to draw 2,000 to 5,000 people in some of these April day games. It was not what it is today.
They were like the Oakland A's.
It was very small attended games. and they got off to a bad start, and the small crowd that was there, and he went off. So terrific.
So today, yes. How long? How many years ago was that?
That's 41. What, yeah,
41.
Yeah, 41 years ago.
Remember last year, it was the 40th anniversary. We did a podcast.
Yes.
And we did the blue version.
We broke it down. Like, the CS, like, they're he uses the dirtiest of dirty language.
That term or phrase isn't used much anymore.
No, you can't.
It's lost.
Yeah, you can't. You can't use
Having
that.
Watched a lot of The Sopranos recently, like, I'm now season six of the final season.
Working like it back in?
10.
You're working it back into your vocabulary?
I gotta tell you, like, you go back in time a little bit, and you forget what was in vogue in terms of some of the curse words.
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen to the unedited version if you ever have a chance. It's online. And then you'll go down. Meller and I have always talked about the rabbit hole of managerial rants from the 80s. It's Earl Weaver. It's Tommy Lasorda.
The Earl Weaver, though, the show he did, the outtakes, is classic.
There's one that...
This was once a week for Earl Weaver.
Yeah, and then there's one Earl Weaver one where he went along with it, where... He was talking...
The tomato plants.
Yeah, he was doing the Earl Weaver show, and he pulled a fast one on the host, where he was answering every letter to Earl, like they wrote in, and he was joking. Sarcastic. Do you remember this one?
I don't, no.
About the woman who asked about tomato... Because he used to plant tomato plants in the bullpen. And then he talked about that she should worry about something else instead of getting tips for her tomato plants. Well,
and the best is Earl Weaver was this back in the 60s, Sylvie, maybe the 70s when he did this. And
this was in the 70s.
So it was in the 70s, and he's getting, like, someone asked why he doesn't bunt more. And he goes off. This is before analytics about bunting. He's like, you know what the key is to scoring runs? You get those big, to your point, Waddle, that word you just mentioned. You get those guys up to hit home runs. That's how you score runs, not have the little gnats running around the bases.
Fleas.
The little fleas trying to steal bases.
Yeah. And then look up Kirk Pavakwa. The Kirk Pavakwa rant from Tommy Lasorda and the Kingman rant.
What about Hal McCray when he threw a phone and hit someone, right? Or did he hit himself?
No.
Did he throw a phone and hit someone?
Hal McCray hit a reporter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was when he was with the Reds at the time?
No, he was the manager of the Royals.
Royals, okay.
Wasn't he the manager of the Reds?
Yeah,
he was.
Royals, yeah.
Did he? He never managed the Reds. He just played for them, right?
Yes, I think that's correct.
By the way, what was wrong with your Cubs this weekend?
Well, they lost two in a row.
17-0?
That's Matt Mervis time, my friends. Matt Mervis time.
17-0?
I told you, look, who told you that Matt Mervis can be responsible for multiple home runs in a game?
Yeah.
Do believe that was in his scouting report, the next Shohei Ohtani, Matt Mervis.
Boy, I was doing a little math with Christopher Morel. His month of April, his batting average is .186 with a .278 on base percentage. In his last 16 games, he has 0 home runs and 19 strikeouts.
That's the thing, that there's not the reward that you're usually getting.
I think collectively, though, thought that roller coaster would be evened out a little bit this year.
Sure.
And it hasn't early.
It's very early. And then the problem is it hasn't been evened out, but we haven't seen the power that we've seen last year and the year before.
Right. Yeah. A likable guy. I hope he finds his way. I had no idea. I mentioned this to you a few moments ago, that Jerry Seinfeld, it's his birthday today. It's not only Lee Elia Day, it's Jerry Seinfeld's birthday. 70. We could all hope and pray and beg to look as good as Jerry Seinfeld does at 70. I would have never guessed that.
You'd rather be as rich as Jerry Seinfeld at 70.
Money's not everything, buddy.
Oh, for you, come on now.
What, time out? What do you mean for me?
Like, would you rather be look like him at 70 or be as rich as him at 70?
Yes, I'd rather be as rich, but I'm not. You make it sound like I'm on an island by myself over here just with,
I was going to. The point I was making is you wouldn't turn down his wealth.
I would not. I would also not turn down how good he looks at the age of 70.
Sure.
I would have said early 60s. 70 years old, Jerry Seinfeld. Meller says he's got a movie coming out.
Yeah, there's a. And I think it's like in the next couple weeks, there's a movie about Pop-Tarts. That he directed and produced.
He directed a movie.
I don't know if he directed
Pop-Tarts?
It. He definitely produced it. Yeah, it's coming out on Netflix. I think in 2 weeks.
Can I ask a stupid question?
It'll be what to watch for.
Is it a comedy?
That I don't think so. Maybe. I think.
How could you have a drama about Pop-Tarts?
That's what I felt silly asking the question.
Well, it hasn't been released yet, so I will have to wait and see. We'll put it on the what to watch for a couple weeks.
Something
from now.
Else I didn't know, that there is a roast scheduled for sometime in early May, so just a week or so ago, rather away from now. Roasting Tom Brady?
Yes. And Belichick, supposedly it was announced today, is going to be a part of this.
So is like Julian Edelman and Gronk.
But Belichick's the more important
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
But especially with their divorce. Here's my question for you.
I didn't know this was... Why was I the only one that didn't know about this? I would have...
They announced this about 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I had this loaded up, but it never came up organically on the show. So you brought it up now. There are two events, semi-sporting events, scheduled for Netflix later this summer. One is the roast. The other is the other thing you're interested in. The Tyson fight.
With Jake Paul?
With Paul. Which Paul is it?
Is it Jake Paul or Logan?
I believe it's Jake.
Okay, I always get them mixed up.
By the way, it just got sanctioned to be an official, like, legitimate fight.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I think that the Boxing Commission just as out. Well, let me quickly tell you, it will be sanctioned as a pro fight. That's how.
Okay.
I'm not a boxing expert, but it's classified as a sanctioned professional fight by the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulations.
Make a prediction. What will be the more entertaining event on Netflix? Will it be the Tom Brady roast the Mike Tyson-Paul fight?
You're saying entertaining, yes. Not viewed.
No, not viewed. What will we come away with saying that was much more worth watching? The Brady roast or the Tyson-Paul fight?
I'm going to say the Brady roast. I don't think that... I think Mike Tyson's going to knock him out quick.
Who's doing the roast? Who's roasting him? Give me the names again.
There was a list on it from Shefty. One is Edelman. One of them is also Gronk.
I don't need all his former teammates and coaches.
Yeah, who's the comedian hosting
yes.
it?
Is it Jeff Ross?
Name? The little guy.
So it's not the Roastmaster, Jeff Ross.
Jeff Ross will be a part of this.
Okay,
though.
So that's good. Because when he's a part of it, not just his roasting, but usually when he's a producer, he does a lot of the writing of the jokes. So if Jeff Ross is in charge,
yes.
I'm very interested,
yes.
because I don't need people pulling punches, giving me barely entertaining roast.
I don't think this will be sanitized.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And it's on Netflix. I think he's going to get drug over broken glass.
Then that will be, I think, the more entertaining event.
I love roasts.
Yeah.
It's Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart's the roast master.
MC or whatever. But is Jeff Ross involved?
Yeah, he's one of the comedians. And then I just saw Ben Affleck is probable to appear.
Probable.
Yeah.
I think the Jake Paul Mike Tyson thing will be entertaining. I just don't think it's going to last long.
Who do you think wins?
I think Mike Tyson's going to rock his world.
I don't know.
Just because of his age?
Yeah, how hard does Tyson still hit nowadays?
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know. I'm asking. I'm
the
legit.
First couple punches.
As hard as Corey Taylor's foot hits a pigskin football.
I know, but the end of his boxing career was not good. He didn't beat anybody. I think he lost the last few fights.
It's not like Jake Paul doesn't get punched in the face hard by people.
Right.
He's probably taken a few.
It's also not like he's Evander Holyfield either.
He's Jake 58.
Paul. Let's gamble. Who's the favorite in that fight? Do we know? I would assume it's Tyson.
I don't know who I'm betting on.
I don't want to root for Paul.
I want Tyson, yes. Yeah, I'm rooting for Mike Tyson. But I think the better play is Jake Paul, no?
No.
I don't know. When's the last time Mike Tyson fought?
I don't know. He probably fights every weekend. I don't know.
What does that mean?
Maybe he just goes out and he fights people. I don't know.
So the odds are Jake Paul minus 360, Tyson plus 300.
Wow. See, yeah, because
so Jake Paul is the favorite. Heavy favorite.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I mean, he's in the prime of his career.
Sounds like a value play to me.
When's the last time Mike Tyson actually fought?
It's been a decade, right?
At least.
And again, like if you would see who he lost to at the end of his career, it was not good.
Can I make, as a non-boxing aficionado, I is Mike Tyson maybe more together now than he was at the end of his boxing career in terms of his mind in the right spot?
How do you know?
I don't. So I asked. I think it's worth a play.
Sure.
Oh, wait, I was shocked that Jake Paul was the favorite.
That was the opening line. It's moved. Jake Paul is a minus 135 favorite now.
You know what
happened? Plus 105.
Everyone saw the Mike Tyson workout videos.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, holy hell. Yeah. I don't think it's worth it. Look, so now I'm even more interested. As you guys have propped up Jake Paul.
Now you're not getting the value.
This is sort of like the punter conversation. Like, I'm not against Torrey Taylor, the punter. I'm just not for getting
like,
a fourth-round
pick.
Doesn't
sound like you're not against Torrey Taylor.
No, you can join that hive as long as you want. But
how many fourth-round picks
you
need to be whiffed on?
You didn't want to spend a fourth-round pick on a punter either over there, mister.
Here's the other thing. Ryan Poles probably would have...
You were drilling Meller almost as viciously as I was on Friday. We were both wrong.
Sylvie just wants the center to be solved, the center position.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think he's got two on the roster. He's got depth now at center.
And don't forget this. Now that they traded the Ryan Bates pick back to Buffalo, in essence, you've traded a 2025 fourth-round pick now for Ryan Bates. He better be good.
Traded what did they do?
So they sent the pick... Buffalo's.
For Booker.
Yeah. Gotcha. So remember, the Bears originally sent a fifth round pick for Ryan
to
Buffalo. Bates. Right. For Ryan Bates.
Right.
A fifth round pick.
Right.
Then to get back into the fifth round.
We had to send them another pick, a fourth rounder for next year.
Yes. We got back our fifth round pick.
Oh, we did.
Right. To get back. That's how we got the fifth round pick for Booker.
Gotcha.
And we gave them the fourth round pick for 2025. So, in essence, you've traded a 2025 fourth-round pick for Ryan Bates. That's what it turned out to be.
He's hoping he's your starting center and if he makes life better on Caleb
Williams. If he doesn't play or if he's not good and you gave up a 2025 fourth-round pick for him, could have drafted another punter there.
Connect those dots. Chiefs and tight end Travis Kelce have agreed to a two-year extension. So all the nonsense about him retiring was just that. I'm trying to look at the numbers on this. He doesn't need the money because he's going to marry Taylor, and Taylor's got like $1.5 billion.
You think? Are you betting on that?
I would bet on it, yeah.
That they're going to marry?
Yeah.
Good.
When I get out in front of that. Yeah, I would bet that he will. I would definitely. Jamal Murray is questionable for tonight's game against the Lakers. But that was going to be a sweep.
What happened?
He's got a calf strain.
I only saw the clips because I was out Saturday. What was the fit that LeBron was throwing? What was he stomping about?
All I saw was I saw it on Twitter. I don't know what it was.
Did you guys see that live?
He was just mad
about the officiating, right? They won the game, but like that was what was he doing? What kind of a meltdown was he having? Stomping like that?
I don't know. The T-Wolves have swept the Suns.
Who would have thought that? That the Suns, after putting that together, would be out in it without even winning one playoff game.
Booker, Durant, and Beal. That threesome. Think Frank Vogel's going to be shown the door sometime soon? Anyway, the Wolves coach, Chris Finch, has a torn patella tendon in his right knee.
He's fine with that, though.
Well, as long as they advance.
Yeah.
I don't think you want the rehab of that. That's not fun. Like, I mean...
If you're not playing anymore, do you have to rehab from it?
I think you would.
You
want,
do?
Yeah, I think so. Think about this. What are you, 51 or 52?
Yeah.
I'm going to take a knife and I'm going to cut your patella tendon. You don't play anymore, do you?
Well, there are a lot of people who I know who don't play anymore, who tore an ACL, who don't get the surgery because they don't do athletic stuff anymore.
I would bet you I'm no orthopedic surgeon, but just to do the average walking around stuff, you'd need your patella tendon even more so than your ACL.
Do you?
That's your patella tendon right there. Can you imagine if I cut it with a knife?
I don't know.
It would basically, now your kneecap is just roaming around.
Okay.
So
I'll take your word for
it. Take your leg and like clinch it. And then that tendon right there. That's my teammate, Wendell Davis, went up in the air at
Philly.
Went up to catch a football, tore both patella tendons at the same time. I think he did. I hope he sued the hell out of the stadium, the vet. And you know, he came back and played for the Colts like 2 years later. I don't think anybody in the NFL history of the NFL has ever, I don't know that anybody ever suffered an injury where both patella tendons were torn, but nobody came back from it.
Spandex Davis.
It's unbelievable what he did. All right, I got some, I do have some nonsense. I got a cat story. I got a murder story. You'll like that one. This is the best one. It's about a Belgian man. This is what I'll lead with when we come back. That's next.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at @ESPN_Chicago. This is Waddle and Sylvie. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
I just got done watching the latest dirty play by Joel Embiid. What happened to him?
The elbow?
No, this was when he was trying to tackle one of the Knicks players when the guy was in the air.
Well, that was two games
ago. That was 2 games ago?
Did you see what he did to Jalen Brunson?
I did see that one. That was more, you know.
That's so dirty.
Yeah. That one was not nearly as egregious as this one that I just watched.
And then he went after the fans after the game.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
I did. Yeah, they're not right.
Because, you know, a lot of the Sixer fans sold their tickets to Knicks fans.
Yeah. Interesting. How about this story? A Belgian man whose body makes its own alcohol was cleared of drunk driving.
Wait a minute. He has autobrewery syndrome, don't you?
I do. This has got to be, where did this story come from, Tyler?
I got to find where it was. But he is the forgotten Waddle child.
He is. I mean, I'm going to read this.
The long-lost Waddle child.
Every now and again, I am a touch skeptical, but I trust Tyler implicitly. Mm. Every now and again, though, maybe we get duped very infrequently. And this is the first hint I have in the article. A Belgian man has been acquitted of drunk driving because he has autobrewery syndrome, ABS. An extremely rare condition whereby the body produces alcohol, his lawyer has said. Man said on Monday that in another unfortunate coincidence, her client worked at a brewery, but three doctors who independently examined him had confirmed he had ABS. ABS, again, is autobrewery syndrome.
This is real. I've refound the story. It's everywhere.
The story is real or ABS is real?
Both. CNN, NBC, The Guardian, New York Times, The Independent, Sky News, People Magazine, everywhere's got it.
Again, it was revealed that in a very unfortunate coincidence, the client, this person, worked at a brewery. So you would think, I'm not going to trust you. The three doctors who independently examined this guy confirmed he had ABS.
So is he always
buzzed? Autobrewery syndrome.
Is he always buzzed?
The Belgian media said in the verdict the judge emphasized that the defendant, who was not named, in line with local judicial custom, did not experience symptoms of intoxication. The police, who acquitted the man, did not immediately reply to an email request. A clinical biologist with the Belgian hospital AZ Sint-Lucas said people with ABS produce the same type of alcohol as found in alcoholic drinks, but that they generally felt less of its effects. People are not born with ABS, but can develop it when they already have another intestine-related condition. Patients can present with symptoms consistent with alcohol intoxication, such as slurred speech, he tried to say, stumbling, loss of motor functions, dizziness, and belching. Now, again, I had no idea. I've been on this planet for 57 years. I had no idea that ABS existed.
Yeah, because it's not real.
Autobrewery syndrome.
If your body would produce anything like that, what would you want it to produce?
Yeah. Money?
Huh?
Money? You've already pointed out that I'm a greedy bastard, so of course I would want money.
You'd poop money?
I would just poop $100
bills.
Burp
money or poop money? What would you rather do?
Oh, I'd rather burp money. I don't want to clean it. Like, I can burp it up as opposed to if you got to poop it, I got to clean it.
Well, I mean, it's not coming out clean.
I got it, but how would you rather clean up something you burped up or that you crapped out? Okay, this is a bad story. I said this to Tyler at one of the breaks. I said, this is a story that's meant for Florida or Ohio or Kansas.
Florida, Ohio, or Kansas?
30-year-old Kansas man who killed his wife on Halloween in 2019 reportedly used some of the payout from his two life insurance policies on her to buy a sex doll. Colby Trickle.
Man's got to live.
Colby Trickle's his name.
His brother's dick.
The race car driver?
Oh, never mind. Was convicted last year of premeditated first-degree murder of Kristen Trickle. Sentenced him in November to life in prison without the possibility of parole for 50 years.
How does the blow-up doll come into this story?
After his wife's death and prior to his arrest, the local CBS affiliate said that he collected two life insurance payouts totaling $120,000, and 2 days later used roughly $2,000 of it to buy a life-size sex doll.
That's expensive.
He spent some of the other proceeds on video games, music equipment, and paying off some debt.
His name was Colby Trickle or
Colby Trickle. Okay. C-O-L-B-Y. Colby because, Trickle here.
Tom Cruise's character's name in Days of Thunder was Cole Trickle.
Cole Trickle.
That's why I was...
Okay. In that movie, he was not convicted of first-degree murder, did not murder his wife, nor did he buy a sex toy. But
no.
It was...
Nicole Kidman was his wife in that movie.
That is correct.
He's going to play some video games.
Yeah.
Play with the sex doll.
Well, he had $120,000 to burn through. Right?
I think it'd be suspicious when you've got two life insurance policies, right? On your spouse?
Yeah, probably.
Feels excessive.
Yeah. And finally, Milan is poised to ban ice cream, pizza, and other things after midnight. New law in
Italy.
I'm
going to Milan on the 4th of July.
Yeah, well, you're not going to be able to get ice cream, pizza, and anything else after midnight.
After midnight. You know me. I don't really stay out after midnight.
Okay.
Why are they banning things after midnight?
In an effort to clamp down on noisy groups crowding the streets of the Italian city and keeping the local residents up. So,
Go to bed early.
What are you going
to
do? No more ice cream, no more pizza, no more booze after
taking
midnight.
All the good stuff away.
Probably buy yourself a good sex doll there, though.
And video games.
That's all I got for you today.
All right. Hockey's A-List coming up. The good, the bad, the dirty. Our recap of the sports weekend.
For all you haters,
yeah, we got
pregame for the White Sox and Twins at 6.
I'm going to have that if no one else does for the good, bad, dirty. We could talk about that as well. I want to have him on the show and ask him. We should reach out for tomorrow. I've decided I'd like to have him on if you guys are fine with that. 312-332-3776. We'll give you the backstory on that as well. The Bears draft, and it's all coming up next.